This is Robert Stark. I'm joined here with Matthew David Wilder. We're going to be discussing his new film regarding the case of Joan of Arc. Matthew, great having you back on.
Thank you.
And I'm also joined here with my co-host, Count Fosco.
Good to be on. Good to listen to you, Matthew.
Thanks.
This film, it's planned on being released in May of this year?
I think that was just something that I said for IMDb because it was the only way to fill out the form. I don't know if it's going to be released in May of this year, but it will appear in the world this year for sure.
So is it still in production or the film's completed?
No, the film's completed and now it's going to be in festivals this year.
So the premise of the film is about an alt-right Christian terrorist who claims to hear the voice of God, and she goes about attacking federal buildings, and she's housed in a Guantanamo Bay-like facility, and she's on trial. What gave you the inspiration for the plot of the film?
I saw in 2013 at the Arrow here in Santa Monica, they screened, they had a double bill of Bresson's Lancelot of the Lake and Trial of Joan of Arc. And I've always liked Trial of Joan of Arc, and I've only ever seen it on a TV or on a computer screen. I'd never seen it projected. And it's a stunning movie, and it's 61 minutes long. Bresson took the transcript of the questioning of Joan and made that his screenplay, essentially. It's 61 minutes. It starts with the questioning of Joan. It ends with Joan being burned at the stake. And it's just devastating. And I saw this movie, and I was just destroyed by it. And I was walking out, and I saw the whole audience, other than me, was like little kids. They were like teenage kids or 20-year-old kids. And I went, oh, man, I know these kids are going to... I'm going to walk out, and they're going to be talking shit about this movie or something. And, in fact, all these kids were just completely demolished by this movie. They were just destroyed by it. So I had this notion of adapting the movie. I just thought, my God, this is like such a powerful story, and it's so tight and so condensed. It's just perfect. So I set out and got the playwright Michael McClung, who's a great mostly a playwright, lives in Boston, and he went and found the transcripts of Joan and sort of transcribed them, but changed the coordinates to the present. And in the first draft that we had, Joan was kind of like, Joan's organization was kind of like if you sort of merged Timothy McVeigh and ISIS. So it was kind of like homegrown American terrorism plus, you know, Islamic terrorism. And we worked on that draft for a while. And then somewhere, like, you know, around the time that Trump arose, I went in and did a draft that was really just an American Christian terrorist's version of Joan. And, you know, if you see the movie, I think the thing that you'll find that's very striking is almost all the language is really Joan and the judges. And her language is really very similar to Steve Bannon or Stephen Miller, or one of those nationalists on Trump's team. She believes in the soil, the bloodline of the people of the country, making things Christian again. She's anti-elites, anti-cosmopolitanism. You know, those who are world-traveled are kind of seen as decadent and evil. It's very much... What she was speaking was very much the nationalism of 2018. And she appealed to this rural, poorly educated base in almost exactly the same way that Trump does. So our notion was sort of like, imagine how many people in America would follow someone who said the same things that Trump says, but was instead this virginal girl from the heartland. I think he'd have twice as many followers as he does now.
Is she portrayed as a villain, or is she portrayed as sympathetic at times?
Well, I think that's, you know, that's the question that has to be answered by anybody who sees this, because I know a lot of really progressive people who've seen this movie who've said, I was really surprised by how much I rooted for her and wanted her to win, and how much I liked her scoring points against these judges. I think Joan is a very lovable character, and I think you grieve for her at the end. But a lot of what she says is, I think people will find loathsome. And it's, you know, when we were doing this, you know, one of the movies I thought about a lot was, you know, not that we're in the same ballpark as this movie, but I thought about the movie Patton. Because when I was a kid, the movie Patton was an interesting object because anti-war people viewed it as a brilliant portrait of a military psychopath. And at the same time, President Nixon showed the movie at the White House as an example of how we were going to win the war. And all kinds of audiences came out of that movie with sort of different perspectives on the character. It's not to say that the movie was wishy-washy. I think it just was something that different people could view from different angles and see it differently.
Do you use footage of Trump and events like Charlottesville? I watched the trailer.
No, this movie was, we shot this movie in 14 days in a little sweat box in Chinatown, and it's largely Joan in her cell, Joan in the courtroom. There's a few other spaces, but it's a very, very minimal movie set in a very Guantanamo-like setting.
I remember the first time I viewed you, we upon the alt-right briefly. I think what you said is you just saw it as a bunch of young men trying to piss off pearl-clutching elite liberals. Has your views on these things changed with the election of Trump?
I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, like when you see this character, I think you'll sort of say, you know, that there's something kind of timeless about what she is pulling for. And, you know, she's trying to represent the forgotten people. I don't know. It's kind of funny. I think the film is not going to give people a sort of a judgment, I think, in one way or another. And in fact, someone saw it, you know, I showed it to someone a few weeks ago, and they said, you know, there's a lot of scenes where Joan prays with her followers. And someone said, wow, I was really surprised. You know, you had all those scenes of Joan praying with her followers, and you didn't make fun of it. And I thought, well, why would we make fun of that? You know? It's not really interesting to make a movie of someone that you're just sort of mocking. So, you know, I don't think anybody will see this film and feel that a political judgment's being imparted by it.
Do you deal with the theme of government tyranny and suppression of civil rights?
Yeah, that's really, Joan talks about that a lot. And, you know, I think the one thing that might be a little different from other Joan movies is there's a real sense, I think, in this film of the sort of the office politics of the people that are judging her. And, you know, they sort of decide, you know, wow, we have this girl who is so beloved, and we have to kill her. She's a terrorist. She's attacked federal buildings and killed federal workers. But we don't want to piss those people off. So we have to find some way to juggle this to somehow separate her out from her followers. And they're sort of jockeying against each other to try and find a way to kill her, but do it in a way that is going to be palatable to the people. So there's a real sense of, like, I think, you know, that she's being judged by very unworthy people, like people who are sort of unworthy of her time, who represent that.
Is there a Trump-like figure as president?
I mean, there's literally Trump as president. He's you know, there's pictures of him on the wall and stuff, and Joan refers to him a lot. You know, in the real Joan said, you know, I don't want to sit here at this trial. I want you to put me before the king and I'll answer his questions. So she says much the same thing. There is sort of an offstage Trump, but there also is there are some characters that represent sort of the deep state. There's sort of a Hillarista character who is sort of an NSA deep state person who questions Joan and then reads the charges against her. So I think there's sort of everyone's represented, you know, at some point in this movie. There's even a Russian interloper who appears. So there's a little of all the ecosystem in there, I think.
Count, do you want to ask a question?
Yeah.
I was just thinking, like, what would you say was the budget for this kind of film?
$125,000.
Okay. And you filmed it over how much time?
14 days.
14 days. Okay. That's interesting. I'm just thinking about... There's not very much on IMDb yet. It's pretty much a blank page so far. The funny thing that I was thinking about is most people don't necessarily associate alt-right with a Christian terrorist, so...
I was thinking about that because the kind of old school far right was more. I'm thinking of someone like Eric Rudolph, who was a Christian fundamentalist. The new alt right, they're far more secular. Is that what you were getting at?
Well, that is what I'm getting at. I mean, I'm just kind of gleaning stuff from the tagline that you have on IMDb, and I'm just wondering, like, how much background were you thinking of putting into it?
Well,
because usually, like,
yeah,
these characters come out of a culture, out of a generation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there are differences between these sorts of groups.
For sure. I mean, I will say this at the outset, that this is in some ways a really not realistic film, which is to say, there's, you know, just one thing is, there's, when you see the movie, there's this triad of judges that are arranged in sort of a pyramid in a way that you would never see judges in America sitting ever.
It sounds kind of Masonic, actually.
Sounds Catholic?
Masonic.
Oh, Masonic. It is a little bit Masonic. There's sort of a trio of these people. So, I mean, hopefully in a way, like, the movie is a little bit dreamlike. So it's sort of like, if you had, you sort of had different political threads and you ate a pepperoni pizza and went to sleep and had a dream about it, this is kind of the swirl that would happen. So, you know, you're right. I mean, Joan says some things that are sort of, you know, Richard Spencer-esque, I think, in a way. But she also says some things that are Cliven Bundy-esque, and says some other things that are really super Christian. So it's kind of a mix of things. But I feel like we live in a time where that kind of a mixture of things, that tincture, could pop up tomorrow. You know what I mean? Like that mutation, we could have that mutation tomorrow, depending on the personality and how popular they became. So it's like, while it's not something that you have seen that particular thread exactly right now, I think you could see it if you had a charismatic enough leader.
How did you decide upon the casting? I know it stars Nicole LaLiberté, but originally you were going to go with Taryn Manning.
Yeah, I mean, it was a really lucky touch, because I think when you see this movie, we were originally going to do it with Taryn, and she had to she had to go back and do Orange is the New Black. So we went through a number of people, and do you guys know Nicole?
I'm not. I discovered her via the IMDb, but I looked her up and I noticed she was on the new Twin Peaks, and I'm a big fan of that series.
Yeah, she was awesome in Twin Peaks, and it's strange. Like right before the summer happened, when we shot Joan, I was in New York with Paul Schrader, who did Dog Eat Dog with me, and he wanted to watch the opening of Twin Peaks, so we watched it, and I saw this incredible woman who appears in the pilot of Twin Peaks, and literally while I was sitting there, I got on my computer and Facebooked her and said, "Oh man, you're incredible!" And when I went back to LA, I met with her and said, "Oh, you're a genius. We have to figure out something to do together." So she was sort of, I had met her that way. Taryn dropped out. We went through a number of different people who were put forth to play Joan who were really not right for it. And finally, I just said to the producers, "Come on, guys, let's just do it with Nicole." Like, instead of waiting around and going after some giant name, like, let's do it with her. And I think when you see this movie, and then this is really the truth, everyone who's seen it has said this, is that the movie feels like it was written for her. Like, you can't imagine anyone else after you see her in this movie.
Did you watch any of the older Joan of Arc movies?
Oh, like the Lili Sobieski one, right.
I just saw the trailer for that one. But I didn't watch that one. But I watched a lot of, Brisson's Trial, which is very, the script is very similar to ours. And also very similar is the Carl Dreyer, the silent version with Falconetti. The question and answer scenes are very similar in that one as well. There's a great one that if anybody really digs Joan of Arc, I would recommend you take a look at this. Jacques Rivette in the 90s did a mini series of it called Jean La Pucelle, Joan the Maiden, with Sandrine Bonnaire. And it's like, if you know the Steven Soderbergh movie Che, it's a lot like that. It's all about military tactics. So the first half is Joan winning battles, and the second half is Joan losing battles and going to jail. And it's very much like a tactician's movie. It's about plotting military gains. And it's I think it's like 6 hours long. It's fantastic. I highly recommend that to anybody.
Just looked it up. Joan the Maiden. It's a French film.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, I will definitely look into it.
It's great. I watched the Luc Besson one with Mila Jovovich. Have you seen that one?
Yeah, I've seen that too.
I mean, I like it, but I think Mila was more Joan-like when she was doing Resident Evil than I think she is in that movie. There's a little bit more of that feeling of Joan of Arc when she's like, double firing down a hallway, I think, than in that movie.
In your film, is there a major trial scene? Does she have a defense attorney who makes her case?
She doesn't really. She has at a certain point. There's this very there's a character that we call the Tragic Snowflake, which is this sort of young woman who works for like an Amnesty International type organization who comes on her behalf, even though, there's like death threats against her. She goes in, because she's she's considered to be part of like globalism, but she goes in and says, "Joan, I'm gonna defend you," and she tries to sort of spare her life, and fails. And sort of sees the system crushing Joan, but no, she acts as her own defense, and she doesn't really, like the real Joan was for a long time not charged. She was just held and questioned, and they hoped that she would eventually kind of give up her mission and tell her followers to surrender, and that's, without giving away too much, that's kind of what happens here.
I guess what else about the plot do you want to give away? Or you want to keep the rest of it, keep the audience in suspense?
Well, I think, you know, the thing is that it is about, to me, it's really about someone who has extremely high ideals and vision extremely strongly, but comes to grips with their own sort of frailty. I mean, you know, the real Joan was, you know, she signed a confession when basically put to the rack and tortured. And then she felt so, I think, ashamed of herself that she said, fuck it, I'm going to tear up this paper and you can just execute me. And I don't want to give away too much of what happens, I guess, but this sort of goes along those lines. And you see someone who is incredibly devoted, fanatically, jihadistically devoted, but still comes up against her fragility as a person and fear of loneliness and fear of pain, fear of everything that's put up against her. And there's a character that I think is kind of interesting in here, which is there's a judge, there's a sort of a Pontius Pilate-like judge who I think has second thoughts and falls in love with her a bit and kind of wishes he couldn't follow through, didn't have to follow through on what he does, but he does anyway.
You know, there are other historical, facts about Joan, which also kind of diminish her, I guess, her prestige. Do you have an opinion on how a myth grows over time from, like, its original?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's so many, you know, there's so much stuff that grows around Joan. Like, there are these stories of her finding men in her own, you know, her own troops, like her, you know, the little brigade that surrounded her, that these guys would take hookers from town to town with them to just sort of hang out and you know, stay in the hut with them. And when she found out about this, she would go out in the field and slap these guys in the face and, you know, shame them in front of their friends and stuff. You know, there's a lot of folkloric things like that. I've not heard a lot of Joan slamming anecdotes, but I'm sure there are some. But I think there's one basic motif that, you know, that lies throughout all this stuff, which is someone who is extremely idealistic and is, by all, you know, conventional indexes, a very vulnerable little person. You know, I mean, Joan was a teenager. You know, she was this teenage virgin who got up and somehow rallied these masses of men to go into action. And I think there's something that's just like timelessly moving about that story, no matter what her beliefs are. Now, I mean, whether all of the stories that have encrusted around her are true or not, I don't know. But I think there's something very powerful about that, that sort of iconography.
Do you plan on first having this released at film festivals, or is this eventually going to be released at independent movie houses?
Yeah, it will go into festivals this year. And then you will, I am imagining you will probably see this in the U.S. before this year is out.
I know that's been a big issue. There's been a decline in independent movie houses. Has that made it more difficult to get independent films out there?
Not really, because I think there are so many platforms now. This is a movie that I have to, you know, like I sort of cringe to say this a little bit, but it's a movie that would look really good on a phone because it's a lot of close-ups and it's a lot of very sterile, a lot of the backgrounds have kind of a THX 1138 quality, and it's something that I think would look good on a small screen. I think there are a lot of indie films being made. I think their travel to the sort of home video world is a lot faster than it was before, which I think is a drag because I love seeing movies in theaters, and I hope people see them there. But I also like the fact that people can see stuff. I talk to people all the time who live in some town in the sticks in America, and now they're able to see stuff that, you know, before, unless you lived in a huge city, you'd either see that stuff not at all, or you'd have to wait maybe like a year to see it. And those people are basically seeing it at the same time as everyone else.
Some indie films are ending up in Hulu now. Hulu's buying up a bunch.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Especially indie horror films.
Okay.
Do you plan on making this available online?
I'm sure it will, yeah.
What was the most recent film you directed? I know you wrote the film Looking Glass, which... That's also going to come out this year. What was your last film that you directed?
It was a movie about Philip K. Dick called Your Name Here with Bill Pullman. And it was about Philip K. Dick waking up to discover that he's living in a Philip K. Dick novel.
And Looking Glass, that's... Is that out yet?
It opened this weekend, yeah.
How much... Was it more the director who came up with the plot, or how much input did you have in the plot?
It was a script that had existed for several years, and Tim Hunter, I was brought into it by the producer Braxton Pope, who did Schrader's movie The Canyons, and Tim Hunter, who's a really good director, who did River's Edge. He's directed a lot of good stuff on TV. He's done Mad Men and Breaking Bad and stuff like that. He was the director, and I came in to work on the script. And, you know, you'll see what it is. It's kind of an interesting... It's based on, I think, the same story as that Gates of Lee's book about the guy who bought the Voyeur Motel in Las Vegas. Do you know about this? The guy who had this hotel where a motel.
Yeah, I think
where,
I heard about it from you the last time we talked.
There were these peep show holes around the motel. So it's sort of a riff on that story. Kind of turned into a horror movie.
I like the movie poster design.
Yeah, it's good.
It has a very kind of film noir feel to it.
Yeah. It's groovy. Check that movie out. I think it's on. I believe it's on VOD already.
Is this an independent film or a Hollywood production?
Looking Glass?
Yeah, Looking Glass.
I think it was all financed by a guy in Vegas. It's like a $5 million movie. So it's a, yeah, it's a mid-sized indie movie, I guess you'd say.
I'm going to have to look into this Looking Glass because I have yet to see this.
Matthew, if you're looking for film ideas in the future, you should check out my novel, Journey to Vapor Island.
All right. Can you send it to me?
Yeah, I'll send you a PDF file of the whole book. It's also about tormented... It's about a... I guess about a tormented individual who has high utopian ideals, and he goes through this twisted journey. Count, do you think that's... You read the book. Is that a good way to describe it?
Yeah, that's a polite way to describe it. There's a lot of stuff in there that is not safe for work.
Like what?
Sex scenes that are a little pornographic, for example.
Groovy. We need more of that. I feel like those are going to be persecuted out of existence in this era. I want to hang on.
Oh, possible.
We must hang on to that as much as we can.
Yeah, I think it has just about anything in there to offend just about anyone. It has political themes. It has politically incorrect themes. It has the theme of a school massacre. It's the whole X-rated sexual dimensions, but it's also, I'd say overall, I describe it as a surreal dark comedy.
Sounds groovy. Please send it on.
We are at the end of the show. Is there anything else, Matthew, you'd like to add about regarding the case of Joan of Arc?
No, I hope that people come to see this movie, and I hope people of all political persuasions will come to see this movie and hopefully argue about it after. That's really our goal. Prompt discussion amongst people and get people passionately argumentative.
Matthew, David Wilder, it's been an excellent show. Thank you so much for being on.
Thank you.
And also, thanks, Count Fosco.
Thanks, Robert.
Have a beautiful night, guys.